Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Which is better for children, growing up with siblings or without them? And is there a relationship between the number of children parents have and their overall satisfaction with family life? We're all familiar with the stereotypes of only children, as lonelier, more selfish, and less socially adept than their peers with siblings. But it turns out that a lot of those old assumptions simply do not hold up to scientific scrutiny, and that only child families actually fare better in some areas. Lauren Sandler writes about cultural politics and women's issues for publications including Time, Slate, and The New York Times. Her new book is called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Lauren, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
We should let people know off the top that you are not arguing that every family should have only one child. You're just saying, look, this deserves to be considered as a valid and reasonable choice.
Thank you so much for saying that. It's funny because for whatever reason, it seems to be controversial to say, hey, it's okay. People do tend to see me as more of an aggressive advocate, but really I'm just saying we've got some erroneous information, mm-hmm. which I think is really affecting how people make their own choices and how we feel about them.
It really is interesting that people get really judgmental about one child, and yet nobody gets upset about the difference between, say, two children and three children.
I think that's true, though, you know, I think that's changing a bit. A sociologist in Europe once told me that anything other than two is a strong opinion. And I think about that a lot. I have a friend who's Jewish here in New York, and she just had her third kid, and she said, everyone keeps asking me if I'm Orthodox. So, you know, I think it's a topic that we have a lot of loaded emotion about, and anything that feels like it's outside what we define the normal as mm-hmm. gets a lot of flack. But, you know, I really challenge anyone these days to define what a normal family is.
Well, the majority of American parents who have more than one child tell surveyors, at least, that they do so for the sake, initially, of their first child. Why does that statistic in particular give you pause?
I really think that people need to be making the choices that they want to make based on the best information possible. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that if most people are having the first child for themselves and the second child to keep their first child from being an only child, mm-hmm. That it's worth having a conversation about who only children really are and also what it means to be the parent of an only child. I'm an only child myself and the mother of an only child. And in thinking about whether I wanted to have another kid or not, I just felt like it was something I needed to investigate, like I report out anything else. And I was kind of amazed by how much research there is supporting only children and only child families that just hasn't trickled down into the cultural conversation yet.
Where do you think the conventional wisdom, which we'll sort of knock down the myths in a minute, but about only children being less well-adjusted or more selfish, how did that take hold in the first place?
So I have been puzzling over this question for 3 years, and I have a few answers. First, you know, there's evolution behind it. So we needed to have more of our species in order to thrive and evolve. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, as people like to say, hardwired in there to a certain extent. Then, you know, as we were evolving, we were doing so as agrarian people. And it used to be that if you were, you know, and this is still, of course, true in some parts of Texas and other places, but if you were living off the land, children were your labor force. They mm-hmm. were your life insurance. They were your farm hands. And the more you had, the more you could thrive that way. But then came the Industrial Revolution, and that changed for a lot of people. And then came a different way of, frankly, being a woman in society. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we haven't quite come to terms yet with what a woman's freedom means, and that if we can keep those mother roles as circumscribed and as time-consuming as they've been for a long time, there's a lot less for us to worry about in terms of how roles have changed. But simultaneously, you know, there was a study just a few weeks ago that 4 out of 10 mothers are breadwinners now. And so obviously we have a reliance on women outside the home beyond where we've ever been before, and we still have family policy that looks like it did when women were stay-at-home moms. And so I just feel like it's time to change that conversation a bit.
Well, and I guess there's also the reality that for a lot of history, it really, the number of children a couple had was vastly outside, for the most part, outside their control. Either nature allowed you to have none or one or many, but you couldn't really step in and decide how many that ought to be.
It's true. And it's interesting to me that, you know, when we talk about family planning, we're so rarely actually talking about real family planning. You know, when we talk about birth control and we talk about the measures that one takes to have, let's say, non-procreative romance, you know, we tend to remove the intentions around family size from that conversation, and yet that's what it's there for.
Yeah. So how are outcomes for only children versus children with siblings studied by social science?
Well, there are qualitative studies in which there are a lot of interviews done. There are quantitative studies in which a lot of numbers are crunched. There are studies that do both. Mm-hmm. And they go back about a century since we have had reasonable methods to study kids and also to study adults. For whatever reason, whatever determines their personality type or their achievement, their self-esteem, all these different things. And there have been hundreds and hundreds of studies done. And there's one researcher who's actually at the University of Texas. Her name is Toni Falbo. And ever since, the early 80s, she's sort of made this her topic area. And she has compared hundreds and hundreds of studies across different areas. And what she has found is that only children, frankly, statistically, are no different than anyone else, except they tend to have more achievement motivation, they tend to sometimes have higher self-esteem, and they tend to do better on IQ tests. The rest of it, notions of loneliness or selfishness or social adjustment, all that stuff is the same. Kids name the same number of friends, whether they have siblings or not. And in fact, there are some psychologists who believe that only children have a stronger primary relationship with themselves, which actually is really great armor against loneliness. So these old ideas just have been defunct for a long time. They just haven't filtered down into what we think about them.
It does seem that if you were to go to a cocktail party and meet a group of adults and talk a little bit to each one of them, if you didn't introduce this, it would be very hard to predict, oh, that guy's an only child, she had four siblings. You can't necessarily tell the difference socially as adults.
Except people think that you can, right? I have a friend who's an only child who used to, you know, get up to do the dishes at someone else's dinner party, always announcing that she was an only child just to see the shocked look on everyone's face. And, you know, it's funny, this sort of anecdotal information that we carry around about how we assess people, you know, it's always so selective. It's interesting when you actually sit down and think, okay, so what are these stereotypical only child traits, and how do they apply to the people I know? Mm-hmm. And if you really think hard about it, I mean, they don't really add up so much, even with the material that isn't research-based that we use to support these things.
So talk about this, because the older research in this, you know, century-long body tends to look pretty unfavorably on the condition of the only child. And these days, it's come around. Should we assume that things were really biased back then, that only child maybe were worse off 100 years ago when their parents didn't choose to have an only child, they just did by circumstance?
Well, it's interesting. There is sort of one person who is the mouthpiece for the notion that, as he put it, being an only child is a disease in itself.
Oh, goodness.
His name was Granville Stanley Hall, and he was sort of the father of the child study movement here in the U.S. But it was before there were child study methods. And he was someone who grew up with a ton of kids in rural Massachusetts, and to him, that answer was the right answer before there was any way to measure it. But pretty soon after, you know, this was around the late 1800s, within about a decade, people started really challenging that, and there were methods at that point to really study these things. And ever since then, so for the past 100 years, people have been showing, hey, it's okay. Actually, only children are not all that different. So it's funny that the research has been there all along. We just haven't really thought about it.
Hmm. Another thing that's really interesting here, and of course we're generalizing, but statistically, parents of only children tend to be happier than their peers who have no children, but also happier than their peers who have multiple children.
Yes. So one of my favorite things about this finding is that it's a body of research from a man at the University of Pennsylvania who, as he was publishing his paper showing that in his study of 35,000 people in Denmark, well-being goes up with the first kid and then down subsequently with each kid, his wife had her third kid, and they're a very happy family. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the whole point, is there's no one-size-fits-all family. People make the choices that they want to make for themselves. But there is this one choice that we tend to vilify. Interestingly, a lot of happiness research also shows that people without kids are happier than people with kids, full stop. So that's what would counter this study out there in the social science, is the idea that if you're going to have any kids at all, you're pretty much giving up on your happiness.
Temporarily, because, you know, we hope.
Kids are expensive and kids are exhausting. But I think a lot of people say, okay, you know what, who cares? I want this and I'm going to do it and I'm going to make it work. I just find that for myself, particularly as the mother of an only child, at least for now, I hopefully have a little bit more time to finally make that choice before my body makes it for me. Mm-hmm. I find that, you know, my husband and I can do work that we love that isn't terribly well paid and live in a city that we love, which is terribly expensive, and travel a bit and be able to nurture our adult friendships and get through a novel on a weekend and do things that make our adulthood feel like it's not just about duty, but also about pleasure. I know people who can do this as well with two kids. I just don't know that I can.
Well, you know what? Go ahead.
A lot of the data shows that, you know, it does get harder and harder and harder. There is more housework. It is more exhausting. And we are all parenting more and working more than ever before. So I really do get the results saying, If you're going to look at the stats for happiness to make your fertility choices, here's one to look at. That said, I don't think that's how anyone makes these choices.
Well, you know what's interesting, though, Lauren, is that that comes into conflict with this. Maybe it's always been around, but it does seem to be a bigger deal for our generation of parents. The idea that parenting is not there to be fun. You're there to make everything perfect for your child, and your happiness has to come. You really shouldn't even talk about it in polite company.
Right. And, you know, I must say, I know that parents of only children have a reputation for being selfish. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but if it is, I want to defend it a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother taught me very, very well that to be a good mother, she felt like she needed to be a happy person. And I really do believe that. I think that, you know, if I feel engaged in the world and supported by friends and I get to have a little bit of fun, those are all things that, frankly, make me lighter and more energetic and less wrapped up in the doldrums of daily life. And I think my kid gets a lot out of that. And I think that she sees then a sort of, I don't know, liberated way of living as a model for her, which I think is actually kind of a strong parenting choice, even though it's something that I've been getting a lot of flack for. And again, I think that there are people who can do that with more kids, too. It just takes a lot of time and energy and money, and sometimes you feel like you just don't have a lot left, you know?
Mm-hmm. My guest is writer Lauren Sandler. Her new book is called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. You can jump into this conversation now by calling our phone number. It's 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
We'll be right back.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is writer Lauren Sandler. Her new book is called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Lauren, you grew up a happy only child. Do you remember when it occurred to you for the first time that people thought that was weird or somehow thought that you had been deprived of a sibling?
It's funny. It's not a topic that I really thought about much until I became the mother of an only child. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. You know, we don't tell children, oh, God, you're so spoiled, even if we think it. We do tell their parents, though. And so when this was something that I started hearing from people, you know, just strangers in the subway, in the supermarket, they would see me with my happy kid and admire her and say, oh, you know, do you have another one? And I would say, no. Well, when are you going to? And I would say, well, I don't have any plans to quite yet. That's when it would become an issue. And so it wasn't something that I really remember carrying around that much as a kid. It's more something that I think we think about as parents, to be honest.
So let's talk about the achievement differences among only children. Are those explained entirely by what would appear to be additional parental resources, additional parental attention? Why might only children out-achieve their peers with siblings as a whole?
Well, I do think that you nailed it. I should also say that it's not like these are huge differences. It's
right.
Just that they are measurable. But it's true. There's a concept called resource dilution, which is exactly what it sounds like, that every child dilutes your resources a bit. And that means not just money, but also time and energy. So that can be about homework help. That can be about college tuition. That can even be about the number of words that are spoken to an individual child, which is actually why they think only children tend to be so much more verbal, is because parents speak to us more, and they speak to us, you know, not in the kids speak that tends to happen in a household with more kids. That can be tough because I think people have anxiety that only children are more adulticized, and that's something that, of course, you got to keep in check a little bit as a parent. But these are all things that tend to develop achievement motivation. Also, higher IQ. Not that that many people test for IQ anymore, but when they do, only children do tend to test better. And there's a lot of confidence that also comes out of that rich family attention, which can be really helpful for achievement motivation as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone to Melissa in Dallas. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm calling to touch base with you. I know you were talking about how single children are thought of as lonely or somewhat relationship deficient, and I wanted to see what you think about the fact that I grew up in the 70s and as an only child, and we were always told that we were kind of pitied because a lot of us were latchkey kids.
And I also was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
I liked being a latchkey kid. I felt like I was really independent. And it's funny, that's one of those anachronisms, right? Like, I always think about how, to me, the thing that that seems most anachronistic about Mad Men wasn't all the drinking but at work, but every time that Betty Draper would say, Sally, go watch TV, that's sort of on the list, right? The 70s latchkey kids, the notion that a child could just go home, let herself in, make a snack, do her homework. These aren't things that we really do anymore because parenting is considered to be so much more consuming. There's so much more oversight. We're so much more in it with our kids than we were when I was a latchkey kid in the 70s. But it's funny, I don't personally remember people pitying me. I remember feeling pretty good about that. But I think that also is one of those things where it depends on the community you grow up in. If you are one of the few only children and there's a different normative structure around you of, you know, mom being home waiting with a snack, Yeah, that'll probably feel different. But I think it's a question of how parents and community frame it.
So you also refer in the book to this sort of media-fueled stereotype that large families are happy families. You know, you have the Brady Bunch and Cheaper by the Dozen and all that. Of course, that may or may not be backed by actual fact. And it makes sense that on television, the more characters you have, the more situations you can create. But that doesn't necessarily mean every big family is a happy family.
That's true. Though I do think that there are a lot of big, happy families, and I think that's great. I think that people who want to have big families tend to have happier families. I think that the stress comes when that isn't necessarily something that you want, and then you are deep, deep in it. So I do think that different families can be happy in different forms. It's just a question of what works for your family.
Do you feel, Lauren, like people look at you and your choice, at least thus far, and say, well, you must not really have been that into parenting your one child if you don't want to have, you know, another one?
It's funny. I do get that. Mm-hmm. And part of it for me is that, honestly, I'm really crazy about my kid. You know, I try not to be crazy about her in a smothering only child parent kind of way, but I'm really nuts about her, mm-hmm. and it's hard for me to imagine who the second one would be. I feel so close with her, and I'm so appreciative of her, that actually a lot of this does relate to how much I love being a mother. But to me, the experience of motherhood is mothering my daughter. Just like, to me, the experience of marriage is being married to my husband. It's not a sort of theoretical journey for me. It's a very real thing with a very real person. And I think because I didn't grow up with siblings, I don't have, like, the notion of family diversity in that, you know, oh, you could also feel this way about a kid with a totally different personality, which I know is how most people feel, and that encourages a lot of people to have more kids. It's just not my experience of it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Nancy in Dallas. Hey, Nancy.
Hi. I just seem to be hearing that having being an only child is a wonderful thing, and that, or that they're spoiled, or I don't know. I just don't think that you can lump any thing into one category.
Well, I think that's a great point, Nancy. And I think you, Lauren, certainly make clear in the book that all families are different, and this is one of many aspects of a happy or unhappy childhood.
Yes, and I certainly do not think that all only children are happy. There are a lot of only children who aren't. There are also a lot of people, though, who have siblings who aren't happy. And this is the interesting thing, is when you have such a strong identity in the world, like you do as an only child, that becomes the thing that starts to explain you to yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you're lonely, you're lonely because you're an only child and not because human beings are lonely. There are a lot of different versions of that. If you feel like you have trouble in relationships, it must be because you didn't have siblings. When plenty of people with siblings also have trouble with relationships, it becomes this thing that we use not just to explain other people, but also to explain ourselves as only children. And that's a tough thing to fight.
It is a bit of a lottery, too, because there are plenty of siblings that grow up close or they become close as adults and have these great relationships. There are lots who have fought from the day they were born until the day one of them, you know, shuffles off this mortal coil. There's no guarantee one way or another.
I agree with that. And I think that only children tend to idealize other people's sibling relationships.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Michalina in Wichita Falls. Hi, Michalina.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I am an only child, and I feel that you can't really put an only child into a specific box. I think we are all the product of our upbringing, our cultures, the people around us, and what we do or don't do, and the people we associate with. This is what forms our personalities and our ideas. But I do feel that there are a greater number of only children who are leaders and achievers as opposed to children who have many siblings.
Only children tend to rank alongside oldest children in these birth order studies. You know, oldest children tend to also be high achievers and have leadership characteristics like just like only children do. One thing which is interesting, and I learned this from a birth order researcher named Frank Sulloway at Berkeley, who writes about scientific innovation in terms of birth order. He writes about how youngest borns tend to be the ones who really make radical change in our world. And he told me, you know, only children are different than oldest borns or youngest borns. They're more of a wild card. They have the potential for that sort of radical thinking, but they still have a lot of the benefits of being an oldest born. So it is funny how different it is. And Frank Sulloway talking about how we're such wild cards really, I think, makes that point is even if you're a birth order specialist, you still don't know what box to put only children in.
What do we know about parents' relationships when they have one child as opposed to more children?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I haven't seen a study yet, and believe me, I have seen a lot of studies that look at marital satisfaction or parental engagement with each other with fewer kids. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have some theories, having done my own research into this.
Yeah.
It's tough. A lot of only children are only children with divorced parents, and mm-hmm. a lot of only children are only children with married parents, and it is hard to generalize, but I do know that if you have more time, if you have more of those undiluted resources, it allows you to put a little bit more into your relationship. You can go out for dinner a little bit cheaper if you have one kid to babysit, and you can have a little bit more freedom after you bounce back from, you know, going through that tunnel of having an infant and a baby and all the, you know, what we all go through as parents. If you do that once, you kind of get back to yourself a bit more. And I have found that that's been a really important thing for me. That said, I think that there are a lot of people whose vision of a happy marriage is one with a house full of kids. And so I think it kind of just depends on what you're into. It's interesting, there's a recent Pew study looking at how parenting used to be considered the most important aspect of a marriage, and now that is way down the list. Now most of us think that romance and engagement and friendship and these things that are more about what happens just between two partners than two partners and their children are now the most important things in a marriage. And I do think that having a smaller family can tend to help with that.
So I know you've heard this argument. People sometimes will say, well, look, having a single child puts a ton of pressure on that child to sort of care for aging parents alone at some point in the future. What did you learn about that and how families handle it and what it how it actually gets handled in sibling families?
Well, I have learned a lot about this just from feeling my own anxiety about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The research tells us that no matter how big a family is, it is the closest residing sibling who ends up doing all that elder care. Or if there's more than one close residing sibling, it's the oldest sister.
Mm-hmm.
Which I should find reassuring that, you know, it won't be that much worse for me when I deal with it with my family, and that that it won't be for my daughter. However, that doesn't address the sort of existential question of what it means to lose your parents mm-hmm. when they are your family in entirety. And I do think that that is something which is tough, which is a little unreconcilable. And I've interviewed a lot of people who say that that is the reason that they had a second kid, that they really thought through all of this and they could not stomach the idea of letting their kid be alone in a larger mortal sense or have to deal with their care alone. And I understand that. I really do. I think that it's just a question of whether you personally feel like that's a reason to bring another life into the world and care for and nurture. And for me so far, it hasn't been.
What did you find? Did you talk to parents who, you know, thought they were happy with one, were planning to have one, and then child number one says, why can't I have a baby brother or a baby sister? Are parents deeply influenced by that, and does it affect the choices they make?
I do think that parents are influenced by that. I'm trying very hard right now not to be influenced by myself. I mean, what happens is kids have friends who have siblings,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that they are curious about, that they see someone else get to have, that they don't have. And I think that we do tend to think about siblings if we don't have them in terms of companionship and not conflict, although all the research shows us that it's the conflict that's actually most important in developing us and not the companionship. It's hard. You know, I'm dealing with this with my five-year-old right now, who, on the one hand, loves being an only child, and on the other hand, like, every week will just sort of stick the knife in a little bit and ask for a sister. And I know she'd be a great big sister, but I don't know if I would be the great mother to her being a great sister. So, yeah, it is one of those really, really tender things. I have found that, and there are actual studies that back this up, that the more that parents articulate anxiety around it, the more it affects their kids. And so this can be particularly tough if you're someone who really wanted a second kid and couldn't have one, and you have a kid who's asking for a sibling, and you say, honey, I want it too. I tried. It's tearing me apart. That's where the research shows us it really starts to have an effect. And it can be hard, I think, to not express those things to your kid. If you want to be able to say, hey, I wanted it too.
Yeah.
But that is when it tends to become an issue for a child, is when parents can't represent confidence in their one and only.
And then I always feel for parents who might have wanted a second child for whatever reason, biologically or financially, it's not possible. And then they fall in for all that judgment and that sort of thing along with everything else.
Oh, yeah. You never know why someone has just one kid or no kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, these tend to be very, very tough personal choices. And it's remarkable to me how much people are willing to just lash out and judge when they don't know.
My guest is writer Lauren Sandler. Her new book is called called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join it, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with writer Lauren Sandler about her new book, One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Rochelle in Plano. Hi, Rochelle.
Hi there.
Hi, go right ahead.
Thank you. I just tuned in and have been very interested in the conversation. I also have a single five-year-old daughter, and I had her later in life, and my husband is also older, so it was an older child, having an older child late in life as well. I am the oldest of three, and so I remember growing up thinking, you know, that I was being told I had to be the role model for my younger brother and sister, had to share everything, oh, the joys of being an only child, et cetera, growing up with that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a school teacher, so before I ever had my daughter, I used to jokingly say that I already was a mother 5 days a week with weekends off for good behavior. But when I did have my child, and I was a lot older, not quite 40 when I had her, I basically had to go through a mourning period for the siblings that she would never have, because I do have a younger brother and sister and enjoy a positive relationship with both of my siblings. And so I had to kind of go through a period of grief, understanding that my child would never have the blood connection that I get to have and get, and through my aunt and uncle with my mother as well. And I just kind of had to go through that. And again, now that she's older, she's starting kindergarten in the fall. We're starting lessons this summer, swimming lessons, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, who is an only child, we are just going out of our way to make sure that she is involved in activities, to meet friends early on and create bonding relationships that could almost be sibling-like through the lack of having siblings. So that was my comment.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, Rochelle. All very interesting. And one thing, and you may want to respond in a more broad way, Lauren, but one thing we've learned is that only children often do get really close with their friends through activities or through school, almost to the extent that, some kids might be close to their own siblings.
There's certainly a tendency for that, and even into adulthood. I have very sibling-like friendships, for better or for worse, mm-hmm. sometimes. You know, only children tend to nurture relationships as though they are family, and that's something that I've really enjoyed doing in my life, but I understand the mourning. I don't have my own siblings to mourn as something that my daughter won't experience, but I do think that that's something that we all tend to go through. There does feel like something that sometimes pulls at our heart a bit around this. And this reminds me of something I actually really wanted to speak to, which is for a lot of people who make this choice because it is challenging to raise one child. I think that there are some things that we can be doing in this country to change those challenges.
Hmm.
So if you are feeling like you are mourning that your child will not have a sibling, and yet you cannot imagine taking the time off of work that you would need to take or having enough money for the extra child care, you know, I did a lot of reporting in Europe where people have it very differently, frankly. You know, the U.S. has the fourth worst family policy in the world, which includes developed countries. We literally rank alongside Swaziland. We are a country that says, you know what, we're going to tell you to have a whole mess of kids, and we're not going to help you with it at all, and we're going to tell you you have to love it and be perfect at it. And there's something crazy about that because, you know, when I would interview people in Europe who were making this choice or whose body was making it for them, they would say, yeah, you know, we just can't imagine finding the time, even though we have great daycare until I get out of work every night, even though we know that there's going to be great college paid for and we've already got health care, it's still so hard to make this choice. And part of me would say, yeah, I get that. And part of me would also say, oh, come on, you've got it so easy. And I do think that part of this is about what it means to talk about family planning in a country that does not offer any support to reconcile parenting and modern living, especially motherhood and modern living. You know, we tend not to be stay-at-home moms anymore, and there are very few people who can exist on one income, and yet this is still the way that our policy is structured. And I think that it gives people a lot to mourn sometimes.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Daisha in Mansfield. Hi, Daisha.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I have really enjoyed the conversation today. We get a lot of questions. We have 5 daughters,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people look and say, wow, were you trying for that boy? And we said we didn't try for anybody, but when they told us we had to take him home, we took him home because we didn't plan it, but we wouldn't trade it. It is very expensive. It's very difficult, but it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm also a teacher like the previous caller, and I was a teacher before I had my daughter. And I know a lot of only children. I know a lot of siblings. I'm the oldest of 3. And I think that you can raise a brat who's an only child, and all 5 of my kids could be black. You really need to worry about making sure your child is awesome and, you know what I mean, like ready to change and shape the world for whatever your family purpose and goal is, whether it's 1 or 20. And I think that you can have a happy family or a miserable family no matter what size it is, but our kids, you know, just kind of need to be molded and guided and shaped and then let out the nest. And a lot of times, whether it's only children who get that bad rap, it could also be the baby of the family who gets that bad rap, or, you know, the oldest kid who's too overbearing. first order matters, but it really matters more what kind of human you're helping to shape. It doesn't make it, like I was going to comment, and then you started talking about elderly care and things like that. My parents are divorced, and my sister and brother and I stayed with, of course, my mother. And when she passed away, we were very young. My brother was 19. And I don't think it was any easier because I had a sister or brother when my mom passed away. My father still lives here in Fort Worth, and we have a great relationship with him.
Yeah.
But when he passed away, it was devastating, period.
Well, I think those are all great points. And Lauren, I'm guessing you would say an amen to a lot of what we just heard from Daisha.
I want to say amen to all of it. I want to give someone a hug. I want to take you on the road with me. Wow, to hear that from a mother of five is so, so, so lovely. Thank you.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Michelle in Dallas. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I was just wondering if the author has done studies across cultures about some of these findings, especially comparing an only child to families with multiple children. I grew up in Brazil, and I'm an older child. It's me and my sister, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great relationship. We're 5 years apart. My mom, her, and myself were best friends. And but I noticed that some of the things that the author was commenting, saying that she would get home and make her own sandwich, for example, was also standard at my home, having more than one sibling. And my mom was at the time. Either she was a stay-at-home mom or working part-time. So she had time to do certain things, but she wanted us to have the experience of responsibility and being dependent and all of that. And I wonder, actually, many of my friends were also the same way, so I wonder if there is a difference in across cultures.
Interesting question. What do you think, Lauren?
It's a great question. I want to say, first off, that I did not conduct these studies. I'm a journalist, so I lean hard on other people's research. Mm-hmm. I interview sociologists and psychologists. I read studies, and then I go out and I interview a lot of people to hear about their lives. And I did this all over the world, but I did not get to go to Brazil, and oh, man, I wish I had. However, I will say that the studies do tend to line up across the board, no matter where they are in the world, both in terms of who only children are and also how deep the stereotype runs. That said, American parenting is a very different animal. I recall interviewing someone who grew up in the States, but her family's from Peru, and she was saying, you know, you don't go to a living room in Peru and see a kid standing on the coffee table. You don't spend your weekends in Peru taking the kid to Chuck E. Cheese. And I think it's true. In South America, there is a different mentality about parenting for a lot of people than there is here, which encourages a less kid-centric life.
Hmm.
This is also true in Europe. So there was this great study done in Italy where lots of different families just kept a journal of how they spent their time. And the way that parents in Italy would spend time with their kids was, you know, they'd get together with other families and the kids would go to bed late and there would be wine. In America, it was, again, the weekends at Chuck E. Cheese. And this woman who was behind this time use survey made a point in her research that you cannot find the words family time in Italy. You can try to Google it. It doesn't exist.
Hmm.
The notion that family time is time which is just parents and kids, it's kid-centric and it's sacred, is a very American concept. And I think this gets back to the latchkey kid idea. The way that we parent in America today is so all about kids all the time and not about integrating kids into a larger society. And I think that's changing us.
We have an email here from April in Frisco who's wondering about conflict resolution. April says, it seems siblings mean you get lots of practice dealing with conflict at an early age that only children don't experience much. I always assumed that meant kids who grew up with siblings did better as adults when dealing with conflict among peers.
That is a very, very common thought, and I really see where it comes from. the data shows us, the studies show us, that only children get all that conflict at school, that school, in addition to, you know, being what we learn from textbooks, is our great equalizer socially. That's why we go, to get socialized as well as educated. And we all know that kids at school can just beat it out of you just as terribly as your siblings. And so people who have tested this hypothesis about whether or not you really do need siblings to learn conflict resolution have found that you just learn it at school.
The other thing people worry about on behalf of only children is that they will have trouble sharing it, that they won't be generous people. What have you learned about that?
Well, I know I deal with that with my own kid, but as one of her friend's dad said to me recently, well, my son has a brother and he's just as much of a jerk about these things. I think that there's a lot of parenting that that honestly needs to be responsible for that. You teach your kid to be generous, you teach your kid to share, or you don't. And you can easily not teach that to siblings if you just want to not have that dynamic in your household. I think that it's just a question of what we do as parents.
Yeah, I mean, and let's face it, no preschooler is inclined to want to share stuff that they really want for themselves.
I know, I do have that moment a lot where I think, oh no, she's being such a stereotypical only child, and then I have to remember, no, she's five.
Yeah.
They're all stereotypical only children.
Let's go back to the phone. Actually, we don't have time to go back to the phone now. I want to talk about this. Have you, I mean, your daughter's five and she's asking about a sibling. Do you feel like you need to get this all figured out for yourself before you sit down and give her a final answer?
No. Whoever has everything all figured out.
I know.
I mean, I know I don't. I'm sure there are plenty of other people do. But no, you know, I'm pretty open with her about how things would change in our lives. And she really listens to that. And I think that she's gotten a lot out of those conversations. I think that she also knows a lot of different types of families. And so to her, it's not like there's just one standard right answer. And that's a beautiful thing about raising a kid in this country right now, is there are so many models out there. And I think that as long as we remind kids of that, they'll never feel like theirs is the wrong one.
Have you learned any strategies for answering busybody parents who feel like they ought to tell you how many more kids you should have?
I don't know. I just want to tell them to buy my book. No, you know, you try to smile and nod patiently. And, yeah, I've had moments where I have quoted the USDA statistics for how much children cost. And I had a moment on the subway in which I cited some environmental research. And then I thought, oh, stop being that jerk. Just smile, say thank you, and be on your way.
Just
so
ignore what they haven't.
It.
Yeah. Lauren Sandler writes about cultural politics and women's issues for publications including Time Magazine, Slate, and The New York Times. Her new book is called One and Only, The Freedom of Having an Only Child and the Joy of Being One. Lauren, it's been such an interesting hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I loved this conversation.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. We had production assistance from Lindsay Connect, and our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can learn more about the show and download the podcast free at kera.org/think. And we always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.